Good morning, I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today, I am really excited to have my guest, Marina Ritchie. She is an Oregon-based nature writer and an author. Her new book, Halcyon Journey in Search of the Belted Kingfisher, has just been published by Oregon State University Press. Marina writes blogs, articles, and poetry. Her website is terrific. So many wonderful articles about all kinds of things of interest. She teaches classes. She is on the board of the Greater Hell's Canyon Council, and she does a lot more. Together, we'll find out more about this elusive bird, this magnificent bird, the belted kingfisher. And we'll find out more about Marina on Talk of Our Towns today. Good morning, Marina.
Good morning, Donna. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm excited about our conversation. And before we talk about the book and how it changed your life, this journey that you went on, let's talk a little bit about your background and how you came to be the nature writer, citizen scientist you are.
Well, I had the great gift of being raised in a National Park Service family. My father was a career National Park Service person. And so, though I was born in the East Coast in Washington, D.C., we moved to Mount Rainier National Park when I was 8. And that experience alone, I think, was pivotal to me loving the West and wildlands and mountains. And so, you know, I grew up with a family of 5, and we camped and hiked, and my dad was a bird watcher and could identify warblers by ear. So I really had it in me, I think. And then when I went off to, I lived in Concord, Mass. We went sort of West Coast, East Coast. And there, you know, I was able to wander in the footsteps of Henry David Thoreau. And I even ran for my cross country team by running around Walden Pond, and ended up pursuing a bit more with my track and cross country career by going to University of Oregon, which I definitely chose for also the wild nature there. So ended up with a biology degree there. And my favorite part of that was being at the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology, still a big influence in Charleston for me. And eventually went on to get a master's degree in journalism at the University of Montana, and have pursued a writing career and an environmental career my whole adult life.
Yes, your website is full of writings on various subjects over the years. So a person could just get lost in your poetry and in your reporting. I mean, you write in a variety of genres, really.
I do. And I've been enjoying the blog format, which I actually started in 2015, which is kind of the end of my kingfisher serious watching time, though I kept the kingfishers amused, but I went on the road as sort of a roving naturalist in my pop-up camper by myself and for a year. And I started the blog then and continued and ended up during that year, I had been living in Montana, made the decision to move back to Oregon and officially moved back to Oregon in 2016, at first to La Grande, and then ended up in Bend, where I am here.
And Marina, what made you decide to study the belted kingfisher? Your book is the first book about the belted kingfisher.
Yeah, I'm actually thrilled and honored to be the author of the first book to feature the belted kingfisher, because this bird, you know, is all across North America, wherever there's fish-filled waters and streams and rivers and the coastal bays all along the Oregon coast. And people love this bird, yet there has never been a book written about it. And my initial decision to do that kind of came at a time when I was really feeling like I hadn't delved deep into anything. Like, as I wrote a lot about science and birds, and I love birds and different things and articles, I'd written a couple of children's books, but I wanted something to delve into, and I hadn't actually quite decided, but I knew I wanted a bird close to home. And at the time I was living near Rattlesnake Creek in Missoula, Montana, and I knew there were kingfishers there. But what really was the turning point was, so I talk about it in my book, was just reading one morning a definition of the word halcyon. And that's the name of my book, Halcyon Journey. And I thought I knew what halcyon meant because I was like, oh yeah, halcyon, it's not that common a word, but halcyon days people might have heard of because it's usually referring to something idyllic, a time that we all look back to as a time of peace and happiness and joy, and we all want halcyon days in our life. But I discovered that the number one definition of halcyon as a noun is kingfisher, and then goes on to talk about a Greek myth of the kingfisher associated with the word halcyon and transformation and happiness. And I was like, oh, follow a bird of happiness, of transformation, I'm in. And little did I know how challenging that would be.
Yes, because what I love about the book is that it is, you're learning about the kingfisher, you're sitting, you know, you take us with you when you're observing the kingfisher, and you weave in, it's part memoir as well, because you weave in stories about your life, your father, your son, your dog, and all of these are happening simultaneously. It's a beautifully written book. I mean, and I think it would be nice to hear something from the book. One of the things I liked when I first started to read it was I learned about belted kingfishers, but again, there's a lot of other wisdom from so many different sources in this book. But you say at the beginning, belted kingfishers are loners, territorial, and wary. They're fiendish to study. Flying with practiced ease above North America's streams, rivers, lakes, ponds, and coastlines, belted kingfishers are the supreme avian anglers. They may be only a tad bigger than robins, but their beaks are blades and their obsidian eyes miss nothing. Tell us about why you describe the kingfisher as a book of quickening and calm.
Well, thank you for reading that, because I think a lot of people can't quite envision a kingfisher and the size and where they live. And they may have heard that rattling call, which I described multiple times. But I think the calm part comes from the word halcyon. And I was like, well, you know, this bird ought to be a bird of calm. But then when you think about it, a kingfisher is a predatory bird that's a great, great fishing bird, you know, dives head first and cleanly into the water with just such precision, incredible, and catches fish, you know. And so in a way, I thought, well, that's more of a quickening, right? A more of a quickening of your senses when you're around the bird. And the calm part is really where the kingfisher leads you. When you spend time in the haunts of kingfishers, you spend time by water, and you spend time by wild waters and fish-filled waters and places that make us feel good.
And this book actually took you on many travels. When you were studying the kingfisher, you were in, it was the bird of myth in London. You were in South Africa. Tell us a little bit about, because you didn't know when you first said, I'm going to study this belted kingfisher, where this journey would take you. And let's talk a little bit about where it did take you.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, is that the book, while the heart of the book focuses on my 7 years of watching over seasons on one stretch of a stream and really getting to know my home place, it also took me, kind of like dropping a stone in a pond and following the ripples outward, it took me on journeys to understand the kingfisher in a greater context. And curiosity is a big part of this book. So I became very curious about one thing in particular, which is why the female is more colorful than the male. And she is the one who wears the belt, and it's a reddish, lovely color across her chest, her white chest. And the male has kind of just the blue-gray bandana, which they both have below the neck. And in the bird world, that's really strange. Almost always when there's a gender difference, you know, think mallard ducks, it's the male is more colorful. So I was drawn to that as a woman, going, yes, let's have some power in the kingfisher female. And also I found out nobody knows why. So some of that was, of the travels was to explore the closest relatives to the belted kingfisher. There's 120 species of kingfishers in the world. And in North America, we just have the one, except when you get down to the border with Mexico. And there, the ring kingfisher is the closest relative of the belted. So a much bigger bird and hard to find. But so there's a chapter of me exploring this red belt mystery and looking at feather coloration and going on an exciting journey where I also look into issues on the border as well with Mexico. And that question of why she's more colorful even took me to the back halls of the Smithsonian Natural History Museum to compare study skin belts. And then and even to South Africa, where there's yet another relative of the belted kingfisher, the giant kingfisher. And then my other travel was to London, where I wanted to see myself. I'd never seen the bird of Greek myth that is the origin of the Halcyon story. And so I have a chapter searching for that bird in Hampstead Heath.
And you talked about being in the Smithsonian with this dead bird collection and how that made you feel.
Yeah, I said it was a bit of a funereal feeling, and I call that chapter Ghost Kingfishers. And it was sort of sobering to be in the presence of all these dead birds. And yet I also delved into the scientific purpose of the collections and really came to explore that facet as well. And found out some interesting history. Some of these birds I looked at, the study skins had these tags dating to the 1800s out here and from Oregon and Montana. And then I would go further and find out, well, what was the landscape like back then in the 1800s? What did the kingfisher see? And what was the world like before we had industrialized so much? So it led me to many places. But then when I left, I was like, okay, I just want to be outside in nature with the living birds.
Yes. And I also love that you spent time with, people, scientists, many people who knew about the kingfisher and knew about the nature. And you spent some time with a Salish elder and you learned an important lesson from the Salish elder. Will you tell us that story?
Yeah, you know, throughout the book, I tried as hard as I could to honor the indigenous peoples and their indigenous relationships with the land. And in Montana and Missoula, it's the homeland of the Salish people. And I was really honored to spend time with Louis Adams, a Salish elder who has since passed away. And he was generous with so many people and students and sharing his wisdom. And he said, you know, he talked about his father, grandfather, and great uncles, and how they hunted and gathered and followed the seasons. And he said, no one was in a rush back then because everywhere was home. And I just took that adage. I think that's something we need to consider in our lives today, you know, both slowing down and treating everywhere as home, as precious.
Yes, it's not over there. It's here. It's where we are. We are, yes, home. Everywhere is home. That's just a beautiful way to look at the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think we, some of the book isn't in my kingfisher experience took place close to my home. And I feel that the more people pursue something that takes them out, it may just be in their yard or in a nearby park or something bigger, but it, you know, by choosing and following one lovely living being, it can bring you home to an intimate, intricate world and connect us to nature in a way that is critical, I think, in this time when we become too separated overall from nature.
Yes, and we're so ungrounded and nature grounds us. And you're absolutely right in so many ways. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, we're speaking with Marina Ritchie. She is an Oregon-based nature writer and author. her brand new book, Halcyon Journey in Search of the Belted Kingfisher, has just been published by Oregon State University Press. Her website, in case you're interested in reading more of her articles, she also does writing classes, etc., is Marina, M-A-R-I-N-A, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E.com. And she writes poetry, blogs, and she's on the board of the Greater Hell's Canyon Council. And Marina, why don't we take a moment and have you read a little bit from your book, Halcyon Journey, in Search of the Belted Kingfisher.
I'd be delighted to. In fact, this section kind of follows up with from what we were talking about Louis Adams, the Salish elder, not rushing when everywhere is home, because I was sifting through my journals and trying to come up with patterns as I was spending time traveling, was always in my little solar powered camper with the kingfisher as my muse. So in doing so, I said, I was looking at everything I had found out during that time period of 7 years. And I said, I was pleasantly startled by the number of firsts and felt a kindred connection to all naturalists who deepen what we know and bridge the canyon of our separation from nature. Why does it matter that kingfishers hover and ram banks, carry pebbles in their beaks in courtship, and chase swallows away instead of staying put on eggs for hours? Why care about the meaning of the rare gender reversal of color? What's the significance of females chasing females and all the variations of belt size and color I found in the Smithsonian? Why travel afar to sleuth the closest relatives, the ring kingfishers of the lower Rio Grande and the giant kingfishers of South Africa? I believe our kinship with all life is at stake. Unless enough of us spend time in the field, immersing, noticing, reveling, and wondering, we won't act in time to save ourselves. We don't have to be biologists. We only have to be curious. When it comes to belted kingfishers, their trilling, consonant-rich calls above waterways send a message the Salish people have known since time immemorial: water is life. Treat wild waters as you would an elder. Listen to their wisdom. Honor the complex web of riparian plants and forests vital to shading, cooling, and nourishing thousands of species converging on these living ribbons of lush green. I'd come to know the kingfishers on one stretch of a home creek as family. Their well-being mattered in the way of love that is reciprocal, supportive, and essential.
That is beautiful.
Thank you. That's in the last chapter.
This book changed you. You had many things happening in your life as well. Do you want to touch on the memoir part of this?
Yes, you know, this. I found such refuge, haven, and reflection. Sometimes I would be completely immersed in what the kingfishers were doing if I was just watching them and they were feeding their young, going in and out of their underground burrow, which is a whole other cool thing about kingfishers. But there are lots and lots of times when I would just be out there for hours, and it gave me a place to contemplate and reflect and center, because I was going through some challenging times during the book. I mean, throughout, I have a thread of processing grief over the loss of my father, which had been a few years earlier, but I really hadn't taken the time until this journey to find a way to bring him closer into my life so that he could be there more for me. And I really felt his support. And my dad was so instrumental in my life, and yet he died at age 70 of cancer. So it was difficult. And then at the same time too, I was raising my son, and I was just one beautiful son named Ian, who is now 25. But during that book, he was still growing up, and I was going through a pretty rocky time in a marriage that ended up in divorce. So I also came through all of that, you know, and found my inner power. I really think I did. You know, I looked, every time you look at the kingfisher, that's a bird of encouragement, because, and just showing you can be brave, you can take a headfirst plunge and change and be strong.
Marina, you have written about the natural world for many years now, and you have been out exploring. What are the changes that you have seen over these last few decades?
You know, there's the big science we know, and I report on a lot, which is pretty tragic, that like we have 3 billion birds fewer flying our skies in North America than we did in 1970. And in 1970, you know, I was born in 58. So, you know, I was pretty aware of a lot more abundance in the world then. And so there's those statistics which are sobering, and it has a lot to do with too much destruction of our planet and ruining our forests, cutting down our forests that are storing the most carbon and biodiversity, and not taking care of our water, and climate change is here upon us. So, but there's that knowledge, and they call it more the existential way. And then there's just the reality of what I notice. And I think there's two things going on. I mean, I'm constantly battling this, and maybe a lot of people are, a feeling of sadness, because, you know, you don't see the great flocks of waterfowl in places where we've lost our water, you know, like in the Klamath Basin. You know, they have nowhere else to go. When I hear about the Salt Lake drying up, there's nowhere else for those birds to go. The kingfishers are affected too, because they, you know, the West is drying up, and we're battling over water, and we're not keeping it for the fish. So there's all these sad things, but at the same time, I have, I'm looking at it right now outside my window as we talk. I have a native plant pollinator garden, and it's a mix of both native and non-natives, but a lot of natives, and it's just buzzing and humming with bees, and I've got rufous hummingbirds just getting as much nectar as they can for their journey. And I take hope in our individual actions that we can make that really tangibly are helping. Like, more people, just everyone ought to be doing that if they can. And I take hope in the youth that are so organized for climate change. I have a wonderful niece, Becca Ritchie, who works for an organization called Climate Clock, and she's out there demonstrating a lot. And there's so I just keep looking, and my organization that I'm dedicated to helping, Greater Hells Canyon Council, based in La Grande and dedicated to saving 4 million acres of wildlands, is just doing incredibly good work and hopeful work that's for the benefit of all of us. So you have to keep taking hope and taking action, and voting is going to be critical for everyone to vote for the environment.
That's important, because you, for us to engage, I mean, we can become overwhelmed, I think, and then we feel we can't make a difference, but we do have the power to make a difference in the sphere of influence that we have, which is our interactions with other people and with nature. And to me, nature is us, we are nature. However, we have this strange idea that we are separate from it, and so it is out there, when it is in fact in here, in us, in the world. We are all connected. It's the pharmacy, it's the grocery store, it's the church.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree, Donna. And you know, and I know that it's hard for so many people who care to read things that add to the despair, and we need to know what's going on. But I'm circling back to my book. I feel that my offering is one that I think brings hope and a good feeling of a good feeling. You know, I feel like it's a book that I want people to feel positive about their experience, and you can take that with you and to become fuel for action, to do whatever it can. And there are so many small things we can do.
Yes, we need to have beauty in our lives, and wonder. And being in wild places affords us those opportunities in ways nothing else does. We only have a few minutes left. What else would you like the listening audience to know before we have to end the program? Clearly, I hope people will go to marinaritchie.com and read some of the things that you have on your website. The book is now out, Halcyon Journey in Search of the Belted Kingfisher. And again, it's part memoir and observation. It's the first book ever written about the Belted Kingfisher. And again, we're all connected. So you created a beautiful piece, which is poetic, which is informative. Any last things you'd like the listening audience?
Well, yes, I was just looking at a few notes I jotted down. And one thing I had wanted to share is we had talked before the show about the sound a kingfisher makes. And that's often what people hear. And then you see the bird, you know, and it's this, and I said, well, it's a little bit hard for me to mimic. It's something like, but what I wanted to share is that I think the English word kingfisher does not sound like the sound, but often the indigenous names do remind me either of the bird or their home. And so I wanted to share this part of the book about the names. It says, the true names that belong to the people who knew kingfisher behaviors and spun their legends. As I'd learned, the Salish name for the Belted kingfisher is Tishalis, which I think sounds a little bit like a running river, Tishalis. On the southern coast of Oregon, linguist Patricia Phillips of the Millet Coos told me the name in the Honus language is Chijitchis, and in Siuslaw and Lower Umpqua, it's Chiahi. And those words feel like they sound like the consonant clusters of the kingfisher. And I love the relationships of the indigenous people with, and I, that's, I guess, what I want to leave us with is those having right relationship with the land and embracing traditional ecological knowledges is also a key to our future as well. So kingfisher kinship to all of you. Thank you.
Oh, Marina, thank you so much. And a shout out to Brock Evans, who is has been a mentor and continues to be a mentor in your life.
Yes. I said to Donna, I told her I was doing this show, he sent me a note that I had to put on top of my board, which was really just a warm, encouraging note. He's been an incredible environmentalist and leader. And we're so happy that he lives in La Grande with his wife, Linda, and is still leading the good fight for all of us to save the environment, save wildlands and wilderness.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for your contribution, your beautiful book, which is riveting about the Belted Kingfisher, and your world, your perspective on life. Thank you so much, Marina.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Yes, and I'm so grateful for Nevada. Thank you, Nevada, again, for being our engineer extraordinaire, and my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. Until next month, this program airs now the first Thursday of each month at 9 a.m. Talk of Our Towns, thank you for listening. But until we meet again, let's hope that actually today, every day, we can pause, and let's do that right now, and pause together and take a very deep healing breath. It's good for body, mind, and spirit, and then focus with gratitude on the things that are going well in your life. There will always be things that are not going well, but focus on those things that are with gratitude, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here right now in this moment, the only moment that exists, the now moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.